That coin was worth more than most men could earn in a year, and Leofric was curious how I had come by it, but I refused to tell him. Instead, I set up targets, and word spread through the countryside that rich gold was to be had with cheap arrows. And over 40 men arrived to test their skill, and we simply marched the best 12 on board Hayhingle, and another 10 each to Seraphin and Kristenlick, then took them to sea. Our 12 protested, of course, but Leofric snarled at them, and they all suddenly decided they wanted nothing better than to sail the Wessex coast with him.
"For something that dribbled out of a goat's backside," Leofric told me, "you're not completely useless."
"There'll be trouble when we get back," I warned him.
"Of course there'll be trouble," he agreed. "Trouble from the Shire Reeve, from the Elderman, from the Bishop, and from the whole damned lot of them."
He laughed suddenly, a very rare occurrence.
"So let's kill some Danes first."
We did, and by chance it was the same ship that had shamed us. And she tried the same trick again, but this time I turned Hayhingle into her, and our bows smashed into her quarter, and our 12 archers were loosing shafts into her crew. Hayhingle had ridden up over the other ship, half sinking her and pinning her down, and Leofric led a charge over the prow, and there was blood thickening the water in the Viking bilge. Two of our men managed to tie the ships together, which meant I could leave the steering oar, and without bothering to put on either helmet or mail coat, I jumped aboard with Serpent Breath and joined the fight. There were shields clashing in the wide midships, spears jabbing, swords and axes swinging, arrows flighting overhead, men screaming, men dying, the rage of battle, the joy of blade song. And it was all over before Seraphin or Kristenlick could join us. How I did love it. To be young, to be strong, to have a good sword and to survive. The Danish crew had been 46 strong, and all but one died, and he only lived because Leofric bellowed that we must take a prisoner. Three of our men died, and six were foully wounded, and they probably all died once we got them ashore, but we bailed out the Viking ship and went back to Hampton with her in tow. And in her blood-drenched belly, we found a chest of silver that she had stolen from a monastery on Wight. Leofric presented a generous amount to the bowman, so that when we went ashore and were confronted by the Reeve, who demanded that we give up the archers, only two of them wanted to go. The rest could see their way to becoming wealthy, and so they stayed. The prisoner was called Hroy. His lord, whom we had killed in the battle, had been called Thurkill, and he served Guthrum, who was in East Anglia, where he now called himself king of that country. "Does he still wear the bone in his hair?" I asked. "Yes, lord," Hroy said. He did not call me lord because I was an elderman, for he did not know that. He called me lord because he did not want me to kill him when the questioning was done. Hroy did not think Guthrum would attack this year. "He waits for Halfdan," he told me. "And Halfdan's where?" "In Ireland, lord." "Avenging Ivar?"
"Yes, lord."
"You know Kiartan?"
"I know three men so-called lord."
"Kiartan of Northumbria," I said, "father of Sven."
"Earl Kiartan, you mean?"
"He calls himself an earl now," I asked.
"Yes, lord, and he is still in Northumbria."
"And Ragnar, son of Ragnar the Fearless?"
"Earl Ragnar is with Guthrum, lord, in East Anglia. He has four boats."
We chained Hroy and sent him under guard to Wintonchester, for Alfred liked to talk with Danish prisoners. I do not know what happened to him. He was probably hanged or beheaded, for Alfred did not extend Christian mercy to pagan pirates. And I thought of Ragnar the Younger, Earl Ragnar now, and wondered if I would meet his boats on the Wessex coast, and wondered too whether Hroy had lied, and that Guthrum would invade that summer,